Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Continuing Education Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, it's a form of continuing education. You may remember some years ago, we discussed something called foreign accent syndrome. Remember that?
Oh, absolutely. I think there was some guy, like maybe from Chicago, and he has an accident. He bonks his head. He comes to and he says, "What is the tow truck doing here? My car. Oh, it is totally demolished. Oh, mon Dieu."
Exactly. Well, listener D. Bingelli sent us a news story about an 18-year-old motorcycle racer from Czechoslovakia who knew only a few meager words of English.
Yeah, like, where's the schnurdling? Is that an English word now?
Maybe not even that. Anyway, one day, he crashes his bike on the track, gets knocked out cold for 45 minutes,
wow,
and he wakes up speaking fluent, perfect English with the paramedics.
Really? Let me guess. His first English words were, "I'm going to sue your sorry butts."
I don't know what his first words were, but sadly, his newfound language skills did not last.
Uh-huh.
His foreign language syndrome, as they called it, was only temporary, and here's what he said after he recovered, presumably in Czechoslovakian. Quote, "Hopefully, I can pick up English over the winter, so I'll be able to speak it without someone having to hit me over the head first."
Well, you know,
what?
This story kind of suggests that the brain takes in a lot more information than it appears to be taking in.
Oh, for your sake, I hope that's true.
All right, well, look, if you want to discuss your car problems with my brother in Czechoslovakian, I'll be happy to hit him over the head so he can understand you.
You know, actually, I've always wanted to speak Spanish.
Well, here you go. I'll hit you over the head with this bean burrito. Don't move.
No.
Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, who's this?
Christy.
Hi, Christy.
With a CH?
With a CH and a Y at the end.
And a Y at the end. I got that.
Yes.
Where are you from?
I'm from D.C., Washington, D.C.
Are you a lawyer, politician, or what?
No, I'm not a lawyer or a politician.
Oh, you sound kind of sad that you're not.
No, I'm a teacher.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
A teacher of what?
English.
Two.
High school student.
English teacher, so you're reading all wonderful stuff, huh?
Wonderful stuff, yes.
Like what?
Are you getting through to any of these kids?
Yeah, sure.
How many? What percentage you figure?
100%.
No kidding.
Yes.
Oh, you're deluding yourself.
You're crazy.
Anyway, Christy, what's on your mind today?
I have a 1993 Honda Accord, and the clutch went out. It has about 270,000 miles.
Wow.
And I got a new clutch because I really love the old girl. And ever since the new clutch got put in, it's making a very bizarre sound when I turn corners.
Okay, what's that sound?
It goes,
as you're making the turn, and then when you straighten out, it goes away.
Yes.
I have no idea.
Does it make the noise if you're turning left or right?
Yes.
And you don't have to be stepping on the clutch, although you probably are.
Well, I tested it out for that, and it doesn't matter. Clutch in or not in, it still makes the noise. Slight turn or severe turn.
And
okay.
Is it somehow related to the rotation of the wheels? In other words, is the volume or the pitch somehow related to how fast you're going?
It seems to be related more to how severe the turn is.
Sure,
the more severe the turn, the higher pitch the noise.
Really?
And you can't... Wow. Last question. Well,
okay.
Maybe not. Last question in round one anyway. Will it make the noise? Can it make the noise if you're not moving?
That was my question.
No,
it was my question.
I was going to ask her the same thing.
It doesn't make the noise if I'm not moving.
What other jobs did they sell you while they had the transmission out?
Just the clutch. And the mechanic actually picked me up because I was out of town when the car broke down, so he picked me up at the hotel. I had to stay overnight. I said, "What's that noise?" when he came to pick me up.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "Oh, it'll work itself through." And it hasn't.
So he had a chance to hear the noise.
He did.
And make up a good story before he picked you up.
And it's hours away where I got my car fixed.
Did he offer an explanation?
He said it was something about the power steering and the fluid would have to work its way through again. But I got the power steering checked, and I don't think that's it.
Well, if there were fluid on the belt, for example, it would make the most noise when you were turning the steering wheel without the car moving.
Okay.
Because then you're asking the power steering to work against the greatest amount of drag.
Okay.
So, and you said when you sit there with the car running but not moving and you turn the wheel left and right, you hear no noise.
I don't think so.
Oh.
Maybe I should test that.
Waffling.
Wait. Is the car right outside?
It is.
Run out. We won't lose you.
We'll take another call in the meantime.
Okay.
So you're going to start up the engine, turn the steering wheel, and see if anything happens.
If it makes the noise.
Yeah.
While
sure
it's
you
idle.
Turn off that heavy metal CD that you have in the CD player.
I will.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, Christy.
Okay. So don't hang up.
Oh, we're not going anywhere.
Okay. Hold on.
Okay. So what do we do now? I'm going to take another call. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Jim from northern Minnesota.
Jim, do you know what's wrong with Christy's car?
Well, you know, it might be a problem with mine, too.
Oh, yeah? Well, let's see. You're from real northern Minnesota.
Yeah, Virginia.
You're from Virginia?
Virginia, Minnesota.
Virginia, Minnesota.
Yeah.
All.
What's going on, man?
Well, I got a 82 Jeep CJ5.
Uh-huh.
And when you put it in neutral, you can push it backwards but not forward.
You can push it backwards but not forward.
I suppose you want to know why I'm pushing it. But anyways.
No. But 82 Jeep, you could be a lot of reasons why you're pushing it.
I figured it out. I parked it on an angle on a driveway, and I got out and left it neutral, and I said, hey, it's not moving. So I started up, turned it around, parked it backwards, and it moved fine that way.
Right, because your emergency brake is hanging up.
No, you don't got to worry about that.
Oh, now you disconnected that years ago.
That's been rusted off.
No, I know. Well,
many years ago.
It may be that the emergency brake is not connected in the traditional sense, but somehow or another, your rear brakes are actually getting deployed when you're in the forward direction. The shoes are doing what's called wrap-up. And the shoes will get dragged along by the drum and kind of lock. And of course, when they go backwards, they don't seem to do that as readily because they're not really designed to do it.
Okay.
Now, when you drive the Jeep, it drives perfectly normally?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when... What a stupid question that was!
Well, yeah, I mean, with the exception of the rust and a duct tape flying off, it's not too bad.
But what's the farthest you've driven it since you've noticed this condition?
Oh, just a mile.
Yeah. I think if you were to drive it farther, you would notice that the rear brakes would probably be on fire. Because I think the rear brakes are hanging up, but they're not hanging up enough to not be overcome by the power of the engine. But if you try to push it, you don't have enough force.
What
in your
you should
push.
Do is jack up the rear and try to get the wheel off.
Well, I'm going to go do that right now. I got some blocks in the yard. I think I'll do that.
Yeah, I think when you jack it up, there'll be one wheel that you won't be able to turn, I'm guessing.
Okay.
All right, call us back. Let us know your make out.
I'm going to go do it right now.
We have to wait for Christy to call back. We'll put you on hold, too.
Okay.
See you, Jim.
This is getting more and more complicated.
We're going to end up taking two calls today. Do we have Christy back?
I'm here.
Okay.
And?
No, it does not make the noise when I'm idle.
It does not
make... And I turned it to the right and the left.
And okay. It made no noise.
So his explanation about the power steering having whatever he said
is baloney.
Is bogus.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
And so let's go back a step.
Yeah, I don't remember what your problem was.
Okay,
this Christy with a K
with a C.
Oh, okay.
With a C. He ending with a Y.
So in order to do this job, they had to take out both axles.
Okay,
that's the way you remove the transmission in a Honda Accord. So they took out the axles and they let the steering knuckles dangle, and they took the transmission out. And I'm guessing that whatever they did wrong is because they maybe forgot to tighten sufficiently the two nuts that hold the axle to the front bearings.
Okay.
And that would make that noise.
That would make this noise,
okay,
yeah.
Well, my question is this.
Yes.
What do I need to do to get it fixed? Is this dangerous, or should I just deal with the noise?
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't live with the noise, because if those axle nuts are loose, they'll eventually chew up the splines.
Okay.
You don't want to keep driving,
and you'll ruin the axle.
Okay.
So you need
and
to
that'll
go
run into money.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You need to go someplace and verify. I think what any shop will do is they'll put this on the lift and put it in gear, and run the thing.
Okay.
And I think they ought to be able to hear it and maybe feel play in those wheels.
And they'll know exactly what to do.
Yeah, and they'll just there's a big nut there, and they'll tighten up that nut, and that nut is what plants the axle to the front wheel bearings.
Okay, is that a pretty easy job then?
It's
relatively,
no,
yeah.
But don't go back to the guy who did it. When you find out what it is, you can send them an email.
Okay.
Say, oh, knucklehead, that was the wrong. But we may be wrong too. It could be some piece of metal that's got bent, maybe a dust shield that's hitting the disc brake rotor as you turn. But
it's pretty likely that these nuts are loose.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the other possibility is that the transmission's falling out. So if that, but
no matter what, I want her to run for 20 more years.
No matter what, these guys who put it on the lift, they're going to figure it out for you. And
okay.
I would get it looked at soon, because if something is seriously wrong, you want to find that out too.
Okay.
All right, but the most likely thing is that they forgot to tighten those axle nuts.
Okay.
And that's whoever does it for you. If that's in fact the case, is going to charge you $10.
Oh, great. That's a good price.
Yeah. Good
easy.
Luck.
Okay. Thank you so much.
See you, Christy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So are we going to take another call, or are we going to go back to Jim?
Jim's going to be a while, I think. Let's take a call. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Len. I'm calling from Malaysia.
Len from Malaysia.
Malaysia.
That's right.
And where exactly is Malaysia?
It's south of Thailand.
Yeah, isn't Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia?
Yeah, I go to KL all the time. Great city. I do not live there. That's a fun place.
I've been in all these places.
You've been to Kuala Terengganu. You've been where I live.
I have certainly been to Malaysia. I've been to Kuala Lumpur. Absolutely.
Tom used to be in the CIA before he was outed. Anyway.
I was in the CIA for many years, and I visited all these places. Of course, I was not under my own name.
His code name was Jackass.
So what are you wasting your time calling us for?
Okay. So I have a 1985 Volvo 240.
Okay.
And it is making a really weird noise, and I have no idea why. Whenever a blinker light is out, on most cars, when you put the blinker on, it'll go double fast, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
On this car, it makes that double fast noise, that exact same clicking.
Right.
All the time. And for no reason. It doesn't matter whether I'm driving, backing up, going forward, blinkers on, hazards on, blinkers off, whether I'm eating a sandwich, it doesn't matter.
Oh, you're getting the tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick sound?
Yes.
Even if
here's the really weird part. When I buckle the passenger's seatbelt, it goes away.
Come on, give us a break here, will you? Doesn't anyone screen these calls? Okay.
So you get this noise the entire time that the engine is on.
No, it doesn't have to be the engine. It could be, there are two stages, the accessory stage and then the run stage.
Right, so anytime the key is on.
Yeah, anytime the key is on and the oil light and all the other lights are on.
So anytime the key is on, whether the engine is running or not,
you've got the noise.
Yes.
And if you were to reach up under the dash, you could find the source of the noise.
Ticking.
You could find the source of the ticking.
Because it would be vibrating a little bit.
You could feel it. In other words, there are a bunch of relays that are stuck in various places under the dashboard. Some are behind the glove box. Some are up above your left knee where you sit as the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be able to put your hand on one of those relays and figure out which one it is. And it may be the seatbelt warning light relay.
The seatbelt warning light relay. You know that it has a seatbelt warning light that's out.
There you go.
There you go. Once you find that relay and pull it out, it's going to be out permanently. And it may just be that. It may be trying to tell you that the seatbelts are not plugged in. Who knows why it's not working correctly for the passenger side. But I think it's trying to tell you that the seatbelts are not on. Do you wear your seatbelt? No, I didn't think so.
I do always. Are you kidding me? You should see the roads here. It's
oh, okay. It may be that it doesn't know the switch in your seatbelt may be gone, and it doesn't know that your seatbelt is on. But when you hook up the other one, it may be starting to do something, and it wants to turn off the light by sending the right signal to that relay, and hence the thing stops making noise.
So get in the car, turn on the key, and put your hand under there and feel everything.
And I think you'll feel the thing ticking. If you just put your finger on every single one of these relays, you should be able to isolate the one that's ticking. And then if you had your little owner's manual, it would tell you what else this relay affects and why your headlights have now stopped working or something like that. So you may find out this relay does more than one thing. But that's the first step, to find out what the relay does. If it affects nothing else, yank it and you're done, Len.
Excellent.
Good luck.
Now, before I go, I just want to say I've been listening to this show as long as I can remember. I'm 23 now, and your show keeps me sane when I'm out in this crazy part of the world. So thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad it keeps you sane because it's making us crazy.
See you later, man.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Hey, do you happen to remember last week's puzzler?
I don't happen to do anything. Everything I do takes work and effort, and I don't do work and effort.
All right, then let me refresh your memory. This puzzler was from my delivery truck series.
Delivery truck? What was being delivered?
Well, I was hoping it was a new co-host, but the truck got stuck in the alley.
Foiled again.
I'll have the whole story, and we'll take more of your car questions right after this short break.
Don't go away. We'll be back in a minute.
You get the car, I'll get the night. Off, you'll get the chance to take the world apart and figure out how it works. Don't let me know what you find out. I need a car, you need a guide who needs a map. If I don't die or worse, I'm gonna need a nap. At best, I'll be asleep when you get back.
And even though NPR's general counsel increases the limit on the network's malpractice insurance whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler. And
yeah.
This was from my delivery truck series that I didn't even know that I had until last week. And it came in from a fellow named Rob Gratney. And Rob writes the following. One of my former jobs was working as a delivery truck driver.
Uh-huh.
And the truck I drove was like 25 feet in length. And one of the places that I routinely delivered to required that I pull straight into a narrow alley in order to unload my truck. You with me?
Yeah.
One cold January day after making my delivery, I discovered that my battery was stone cold dead. I guess I had left my lights on, and when I went for coffee and a schnurdling and then came back, the thing was gonzo. Well, another delivery truck driver had pulled into the alley right behind me. So I asked if he had a set of jumper cables and a, you know, strong battery so he could jump me. He did, but the problem was that his cables were only 16 feet long, and they wouldn't reach from his battery to mine. When the alley was too narrow to try to park the truck side by side, that would have worked, but it couldn't. And my truck was too heavy to be pushed into a better position. I thought about swapping batteries with this guy so I could at least pull my truck out of the alley, but the cable connections were so corroded on both trucks that they wouldn't budge. And, oh, yeah, we didn't have any tools either. I then struck upon an idea that allowed us to get my truck started in only a few short minutes. What was the idea?
You put the two cables together and you put the bumpers touching.
Exactly.
Wow!
Jumper cables consist of two wires.
Yeah.
All right, with clamps on each end. So you've got four clamps.
Yeah.
Right? And they're kind of stuck together through the insulation. And if you peel them apart and then clamp the ends together, you have, instead of one 16-foot-long pair of jumper cables, you have one 32-foot-long cable, but you only have one.
You only have one of them.
But trucks have steel bumpers and steel frames, and the steel of the frame is the conductive path for all the electrons, and you made the electrons travel through one cable and then through the frames of both vehicles to get back to the original jumping battery, and voila.
Wow.
The thing was started. Pretty good, eh?
Yeah.
Do we have a winner?
The winner this week is Jane Fuqua from Zionsville, Indiana. And for having her answer selected at random from among the pile of correct answers that we got, Jane is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get a copy of our new 4-CD collection called Field Guide to the North American Wacko.
These are 4 shows that we think will help familiarize you with the species we've identified as the not-so-rare North American Wacko.
Whose primary habitat appears to be this show.
Right, so you'll hear callers like Cindy, who thought she was adding oil to her engine but turned out to be pouring Maalox into the crankcase.
Yeah, she's just one of many callers on the new collection called Field Guide to the North American Wacko, and that's yours, Jane, if you want it, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Yay for Jane!
Yay.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new Puzzler coming up in the third half of the show. In the meantime, you can ask the questions by calling 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
This is me again with the Jeep.
Oh, the Jeep guy.
Oh, I figured.
Jim with the Jeep, with the CJ5.
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
Hey, I went out and I got it sitting right now up on top of some firewood. I jacked it up and put some blocks underneath it.
Firewood? Is there kindling in there? Because I thought one match, you get rid of your whole problem here.
If I can't get this broke free, we'll just light it on fire and have a little party.
I forgot what your problem was.
The thing it won't roll forward, but it'll roll backwards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And?
And, well, the back right tire was locked up that way.
Uh-huh.
Took off the lug nuts and had to take a pry bar.
You had to get the drum off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was just pressed out against there.
Yeah.
And so I took that a little wheel adjustment.
Yeah, the star wheel, the brake adjuster.
Screwed all the way down, screwed all the way back, screwed it about halfway, and it slid on nice.
Sure.
I don't know what happened.
Well, I think what maybe happened is that the wheel cylinder is seized. If you look at the top, exactly 180 degrees from where that star wheel is,
There's
the hydraulic cylinder.
Yes.
And when you step on the brake pedal, fluid gets pushed to that from the master cylinder, and there are 2 little pistons in there that get pushed out against those 2 brake shoes.
Right.
When you take your foot off the brake, the spring that holds the shoes to one another is supposed to force those pistons back home. My guess is they've moved out and they ain't going home anymore.
Ah.
And it's going to happen again.
So okay.
What you need to do is take the shoes off.
Right.
Okay, take the other drum off first, so when all those pieces go flying, you'll know which ones are missing when you try to reassemble it. So you'll have something, a guide to go by. But I think you're going to find out that cylinder might be stuck.
Okay.
Okay, so either it was the handbrake that was sticking the thing, or such as it was the handbrake, or it's that cylinder.
Okay.
So if you can't move those pistons in that cylinder, then you need to replace that.
Okay, hey, but by the way, I seen you guys on TV last night.
How'd we look?
Well, now I know who uses Grecian formula on the side of their head.
There you go.
All right.
See you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Who would that be?
That would be me.
Oh.
You know, I was noticing how little hair I have.
Really?
Well, I was kind of disappointed. All those shots they took from the back. And I never look back there, but it's scary. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jane from Radium Springs, New Mexico.
Radium?
Yes.
Like the radioactive element?
Yes.
And, wow.
And is this a natural site for radium?
It's we have hot springs, but I don't think there's any radium.
Well, why would they call it radium springs?
They thought there was radium in the water around the turn of
the
century.
Is there anyone there with 11 fingers?
Yeah, maybe.
Really? So
maybe everyone's got 11 fingers and they never noticed.
Right?
Yeah.
And somebody shows up with 10. What the hell's the matter with you? Radium Springs. Boy, that's a pretty ominous sounding name.
It really is.
Oh, it's a nice little town.
Oh, well, thanks for calling,
I'm sure
Gene.
It is. I think the only thing that might be worse would be Plutonium Springs.
No.
Spent plutonium. Anyway, Radium Springs, eh? All right, well, we're with you. What's going on, Gene?
Okay. Well, we live on a little bluff overlooking the river, and there's a 50-foot cliff off that runs along the edge of our driveway. And my 1983 Porsche 944 had been parked perpendicular to the edge of the driveway and the cliff. And it was about 30 feet away from the cliff. And I came home from town one day and found my Porsche teetering on the edge of the cliff.
Oh.
It had driven there by itself.
Oh.
And what happened?
Well, we kind of thought it was a little bit suicidal.
Yeah.
My husband and I pushed it back and put chocks under all the tires. So it couldn't get away. But we don't know why it did that.
Wait, how did you push it if it was hanging
off
the edge?
Well, we stood on the edge of the cliff and...
Very what, are you crazy?
You are crazy.
Well, yeah, well, we live in Radium Springs.
You had a couple of... Oh, it's gotten to your brain. So you had a couple of 1,000 pounds of automobile, basically ready to run you over with one misstep by you and your husband... Now, you lost your footing and the car made a little headway in the wrong direction. It could have, not only would we have lost the car, but we would have lost you and your husband, Gene.
That's true.
So you saved the car.
Yeah, we did.
And now what?
The car had been parked initially in reverse. The emergency brake was on. There was no key in the car. We had just driven it the day before, so we knew it was running.
Yeah.
It just drove itself.
So obviously it drove downhill.
No, it drove actually up a slight incline.
Oh, jeez.
What?
It did.
You don't have a teenage son?
We do. Well, he's 20.
Wait a minute. Let's go back a step here. In order to drive up this incline, it would have to have been in first gear. Am I correct? Or would it have?
It backed up.
It backed up. So
it was backing up.
Oh, okay. So it could have, if the engine turned in the proper direction. Then it would have backed up this incline.
Yes.
Okay, so the fact, if it had been in first instead of reverse, it would have wound up going in the other direction.
Yeah, it would have gone down the hill.
It would have gone down the hill.
Have you verified that the handbrake works?
It does. It's very strong, yes.
I think we can say without any doubt that somebody had to have done something, because if the handbrake is on and it's in gear and it moves up a hill, it didn't do
old
that by itself.
Old contrary piston puss.
Oh, no. You tell me.
I'm going to describe you now a scenario.
I can hardly wait.
Me too. Somehow or another, the thing didn't start, because that would require someone energizing the ignition circuit. But what did happen was the starter motor got energized all by itself.
Okay.
And
come on.
Well, that's
I mean, I know that it can happen.
It can happen.
I remember the day. I remember the day the car was on the lift and all of a sudden it started up.
And
that scared us.
Yeah, and we've had other cases and it happens all the time.
Okay.
You occasionally see a car that has just been parked and has burst into flames.
Oh.
And it often happens when the starter motor engages all by itself with no provocation from an individual or nobody turning the key or anything like that.
It does happen. I will admit. And
the starter motor will begin to turn. And, of course, if the thing's, for example, in neutral or in park, if it were an automatic, the starter motor would simply crank, and it wouldn't start the engine because there's no spark, and it would draw so much current that it would eventually catch fire.
Well, you know, the battery... was dead when we found it.
Yes.
And the battery will not recharge, and also we tried a different battery in it, a good battery, and it didn't work either.
And what may have saved you was the emergency brake.
Okay.
Because the starter motor has so much torque that it's enough to overcome that emergency brake.
Oh.
So what happened is the starter motor engaged, and it started to draw energy from the battery.
It started
to move the thing backwards because
it was
in
reverse,
and it maybe went a foot, maybe went an inch, who knows, but it stayed engaged. And every time that starter had a chance to overcome that emergency brake, it did. So it moved an inch, a foot, an inch, who knows, and maybe it just struggled against the emergency brake. And finally,
Luckily,
the battery died. Exactly.
Yeah. The battery died just before it went over the edge.
Yeah, that was lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be that there's a crossed wire or shorted wire someplace.
Uh-huh.
The problem could be right inside the starter motor solenoid.
Okay.
You know, so it could have been the starter itself that did it.
Uh-huh.
And
so
the first thing I would do is replace the starter.
Okay.
Right.
See
I would
what
take,
happens.
Take the starter out and don't leave it in gear anymore. Well,
a lot of people leave it in gear because it keeps it from rolling.
Right.
But it went anyway.
Yeah, and actually, I would do exactly this. I would fix it if you can. So put a battery in it. You may have just killed the battery.
Uh-huh.
The starter motor may have just burned itself out, and I'm guessing that's what happened.
Yeah,
okay.
It may have taken
so
quite a while for it to get from where it was to where it ended up.
Right. It may have taken a day.
No, I did it like in a period of 3 hours.
Maybe it took 3 hours. That sounds amazing. But whatever it did, it was enough to kill the battery.
Okay.
And the starter motor is now obviously junk because I think that's what caused the problem. So you need to replace the starter.
Okay.
And put a battery in it and then see if it happens again. What you're going to have to do is camp out and watch the thing.
Yeah.
Make a thermos bottle full of coffee and sit out there and watch it. And if it's all right for one night, I think you're good to go.
Okay.
All right. And if it goes off the cliff, it goes off the cliff. What can you do, Gene?
It would join the Model A down the bottom of the cliff.
Ah!
All right. It could also be that radium, that radioactive whatever.
Something could be happening, yeah.
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 Who knows? Well, good luck. And let us know if anything exciting happens.
Okay. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
Oh, I'm exhausted.
So
888-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, fellas. This is John from San Francisco.
Hey, John. What's going on?
Well, I got a 98 Volkswagen Passat, and sounds like a jet flying over your head whenever I'm going at speed, anywhere from 5 to 80 miles an hour.
Have you looked?
Yeah, I've checked the scene. It's no jets around.
So you start off from a dead stop, and you get up over 5 miles an hour, and you get this horrible sound coming at you?
That's correct, and it's from the front end. Yeah,
that the noise?
I got a...
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's scary. How long has this sound been there?
Just since the last month. The car was sitting for about 6 months and shipped it across the country, and now I got this sound coming from the front end. Now it gets
Where was
worse.
It sitting? Was it sitting in water by any chance?
No, it was sitting in a garage up in New Hampshire.
Ah. Uh-huh. And what's the farthest you've driven it with this noise?
Oh, about 400 miles.
Really?
And you heard the noise all the time during this entire 400-mile trip?
Well, I turned the stereo up a little bit.
Yeah, what kind of music do you listen to?
Oh, classic rock, mostly.
Classic rock. Well, that's good. That'll drown it out, usually.
Yeah.
But so you weren't any more concerned about it?
No, it drives great.
It drives... I'm always puzzled. So here's a noise that sounds, for all the world, like the car is going to fall apart, perhaps.
Yeah.
And yet, you were no more concerned about it than you would be about, like, a loose rear-view mirror.
Well, I should tell you this. It increases, the noise increases a little bit when you turn right.
Ah. Well, that's good. You know why?
What's that?
I don't know why, actually.
I didn't think you did.
No. I think it when you turn right, it's telling me that the noise is, you're going to verify this, is primarily coming from the left front wheel.
That's it.
And when you make a turn to the right, it gets worse.
That's correct.
Yeah, and it tells us that the left front wheel bearing is gone.
Left front wheel bearing. That sounds expensive, guys.
It's a few hundred bucks.
It's not terribly expensive, but it's terribly dangerous.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because eventually it's going to...
It's going to seize up and
then
it's goodbye, Jack.
All right.
Well, John, as the case may be.
Oh, John, as the case may be, right.
Yeah, so, and it's going to happen soon.
Oh, yeah, if you drove 400 miles, it's ready.
All right, I got to take this to the doctor then.
Oh, yeah. Take it to the doctor.
And drive it slowly when you go there.
Okay, fellas.
Yeah,
but do it right away because it really is ready to seize up.
Make sure you have your affairs in order too. Just in case. You never know. I mean, these things happen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
See you, John.
All right.
Bye, bye.
Bye.
All right. We have to take a short break now.
Right. This is what they call station identification.
Well, yeah, but that's not what we call it.
It's not.
No, no. When stations put all those call letters and cities out there, it makes it harder for listeners to figure out exactly where to send their hate mail. So we call these breaks throwing them off the trail breaks.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll be back with a brand new puzzler, right?
Yes, yes, we will. And it's from my shipping and handling series.
Huh. We'll be back with that and more of your calls right after we throw our detractors off the trail.
Please stay tuned.
An early midlife crisis looms, and for me to survive it, I'll find myself a motorbike and learn how to ride it. I'll stop out where the grass is dry and the hills are tall and black, and sleep under the spotted veil with the dirt against my back. The dirt against my back.
And even though the host of Antiques Roadshow heaves Martha Washington's chamber pot at his radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new puzzler.
Okay, go. I'm ready.
Are you taking notes?
Yeah. I have to remember it next week.
Right.
Yeah.
This came in from someone named John Kelly, and I didn't mess around with it too much. See how you like it.
That'll be interesting.
True story, he writes. While living in the Bronx, a friend who will remain anonymous bought a car in White Plains, about 21 miles north of the city. He didn't have anyone to help him pick up the new car, so he decided to do it all by himself. Now, whenever someone says, a friend who will remain anonymous, and then the rest of the story is something harebrained, yeah. You know...
It's him.
It's him. Yeah, so John, we're with you, brother. Anyway, and because he wasn't trading the car in, he had to come up with this ingenious plan. He wasn't trading in his old car. You ready? Here's what he did. He drove his old car 21 miles north, right, and parked it in the dealer's lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Picked up the new car, you know, paid for, got the keys and all that, and drove it 1 mile south.
Yeah.
Locked it up, walked back north 1 mile to the dealer, picked up his old car, drove it, the older car.
2 miles.
2 miles.
Got it.
Locked that up, walked back 1 mile, picked up the new car, drove it 2 miles south, locked it up, walked back 1 mile to the other car, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until he reached home with both cars.
And how far was home?
It was 21 miles between where he lived in the Bronx.
And
the dealership in White Plains.
Okay.
So the question is, at the end of the very long, long day, how many total miles did he walk and drive?
Yeah.
Okay, so we want the total number, you know.
Sounds simple.
Sounds simple enough, right? But
it does.
Be careful. If you think you know the answer, scratch it on the side of a Bobcat 2200 4x4 utility vehicle with IntelliTrac four-wheel drive, continuously variable transmission, 20 horsepower liquid-cooled diesel engine, of course, 1,200-pound capacity, bucket seat, driver and passenger cup holders, and 24-hour lawn-side assistance, and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a question for us about your car, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Becky from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Becky. How are you?
I'm good. I have a 99 Ford Taurus. Uh-huh. And the overdrive off light will start flashing at me, the speedometer will stop working, and the car won't go past, like, second gear. I'm not really sure because the speedometer stops working, so I'm not really sure how fast it goes, but it's slow. But it'll rev up to, like, 5,000 RPMs. And it'll do this, and then I'll turn the car off, I'll let it sit for 10 minutes, I'll turn it back on, and it's fine.
Huh?
I know, right? Huh? Like, what's going on?
Well,
boy, oh boy, oh
So the transmission, the overdrive light is flashing, but I don't think that's the issue. But what happens is it must be shifting into neutral. That's why when you step on the gas,
it's revving up like that.
That's what's happening. It's the transmission is shifting out of drive and shifting into neutral. either by some problem with the electronics or there's something wrong with the transmission. But it would seem to me it would have to be more electrical because of all the other stuff that's going on.
That's what I was hoping, like, because since the speedometer stops working and everything, too.
When the thing is revving, is the car moving still?
Yeah, it's still moving. Like, if I step on the gas, if I floor it, it'll rev really high and it'll move really slow, but it's still moving.
Oh, you know, okay, it's not shifting out of first gear.
Okay.
So the fact that the speedometer isn't working correctly, I've got to imagine that the check engine light is on, too.
Yes, it is.
All right, well... It may be something as simple as the vehicle speed sensor not doing its job. Because if the vehicle speed sensor, which is something that tells the computer how fast you're going, isn't doing its job or sending wacko signals, at one time it'll make the transmission not shift. What if the vehicle speed sensor said you were doing 12 miles an hour? Okay, the speedometer would read peculiarly. And the transmission wouldn't shift out of first because at 12 miles an hour, you'd
be in first
gear.
You're supposed
to be in first. Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
Well, did this happen like all of a sudden?
You know what's so funny? This is the best part, is I bought the car from a mechanic friend of ours in Montana. I'm from Montana.
Uh-huh.
And I moved out here to Portland, Oregon like 2 months ago. And our mechanic friend came with us. He helped drive the U-Haul. We got to Portland. I dropped him off at the bus station. I handed him the last $100 I owed him on the car. I turned around and drove away, and it started happening. Like, literally a block after I paid him off for the car.
Boy, this guy's got a gift.
Yeah,
he really does.
I mean, he actually called him in Montana, and I was like, how'd you do that? How did you set that up back then?
Yeah, that's my question, too.
Yeah. So did he have any ideas what was wrong with it?
He thought maybe a sensor, like maybe the overdrive, he might have meant the same thing, like the relay box.
Well, there's a switch for the overdrive, too, but I don't think that would cause it to not shift out of first. I think when you get this thing scanned, they're going to hook a machine up to it.
When you take it to the shop.
They'll hook up the diagnostic machine. It'll tell them what's going on, and it might be easily fixed.
Okay.
Yeah, and then also do a background check on your bank account and see if you have any money left.
Hey,
don't know how much to charge.
There's nothing
you.
In it.
Good
so,
luck, Becky.
You know.
Take care.
That's why I'm really hoping it's not the transmission.
No, I think it's probably not.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
See ya.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, my name is Matthew. I'm calling from Columbus.
Hi,
hey,
Matt.
Matthew. What's going on?
Well, I have a 97 Saturn, and it used to be great. Now, when I turn it on and I take off, it starts making this terrible squealing noise coming from under the hood. And I thought it was belts and stuff, so I went and I put, like, belt dressing on it. No dice. So what I ended up doing now is it seems that if I'm driving down the road, it starts squealing, and if I just turn the ignition off, and turn it back on, it's a stick, car starts right back up, it gives one last satisfied chirp, and then I get maybe like 10 minutes of squeal-free driving.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Really?
Now, when you start the car in the morning, does it start squealing right away, or does it wait until you stop moving?
Sometimes it starts squealing right away. Sometimes it waits until I actually engage the clutch and start to try and pull out.
Oh, really? So I have to, in other words, you're revving up the engine. In other words,
yeah.
While it's idling, it isn't squealing. And you said you put belt dressing on it, which, by the way, is the wrong thing to put on that kind of a belt. Your car has a serpentine belt.
Okay.
And I think on the can of belt dressing, if you read it, it says doesn't work on serpentine belts.
Oh, so that was a bad idea then.
Well, it wasn't the worst idea.
Didn't hurt anything.
Yeah. I mean,
but it doesn't work.
You could have put some other kind of dressing on there, like Thousand Island. That would have been worse. But when you did that, did it change anything?
Well, I was out about $5.
No. But it didn't change the
noise?
You
didn't hear the sound change?
No, not really at all.
And how long has this been going on?
This has been going on for about a year now.
Well, forget about it.
I'm constantly amazed at how many people will let things go on for
a year.
And so what, just out of curiosity, what made you call us today?
Well, I have this growing fear that I'm going to be driving down the road and all of a sudden I'm going to hear some sort of like twing snap sound like a rubber band breaking.
Yeah.
And that I'm going to be walking.
Well, you might be. I mean, the belt might just be so worn out that there's nothing that can be done. Even tightening it might not help. So you may just need a belt. I imagine.
How many miles on this car?
Got to be 100.
About 130 some.
I wouldn't even waste my time. I'd just go replace the belt.
Oh, I thought you'd say go replace the car. Yeah, no. You might want to just replace the belt. And when it's off, you could have somebody, or you could spin the belt tensioner.
Okay.
And see if that's making noise. And you could spin everything else that the belt drives, you know, the air conditioner compressor, the water pump, the alternator.
To make sure that those things are not what's making the noise.
Okay.
And you don't have to do this yourself, but just ask the guy who's going to replace the belt to do it.
Okay.
Has this thing seen the inside of a repair shop in the last year? Or
Are
you relying on us entirely?
I'm relying on you guys. You guys and
you crazy?
Maybe a good old Haynes manual.
And the Haynes, what did the Haynes manual say?
Well, I lost the Haynes manual, so now it's down to you guys.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, take it someplace. Have them take the belt off. They'll spin all the accessory devices that get run by the belt. If they determine that there's no noise coming out of any of those,
then it was the belt.
They'll put a new belt on, and if that doesn't fix it, then call us back.
All right.
Okay, we'll do
a
revisit.
Like a plan.
All right, Matthew.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Susan from New York.
Hi, Susan from New York City.
New York City.
What's going on?
Big Apple.
Yeah, what's going on, Susan?
Well, I have a little family dilemma. I have a 1999 BMW 323 convertible in Florida. It's sitting in Florida right now. And I want to get it to New York for the summer.
Whereabouts in Florida is it?
It's in the Palm Beach area, West Palm Beach.
Yes.
And my niece, who's 26, and her boyfriend have volunteered to drive the car for me back up to New York. They
Perfect.
Think this would be an adventure.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that was great until I learned that they have never driven a stick shift car before, and this is a five-gear stick shift.
Uh-huh.
So I told them that they had to take driving lessons with a stick shift.
Yeah.
They have not done that, and they're saying, oh, you know, well, we'll just practice for a day and we'll be fine. So I got worried about their safety, and then I'm also worried about what they could do to my car. So I called my niece's mother, who's my sister,
mm-hmm.
and I said, look, Maya wants to drive the car, and I'm a little nervous about it. What do you think? Figuring her mom could put a little pressure on her. And she said, oh, don't worry about it. We all learned to drive stick shift by just getting into the car, and we all stalled in the intersection, and we all slid downhill, and she'll be fine.
Right, and $1,700 later, when you put a new clutch in it, it will be fine again.
You know, it is possible, as we know, to wreck a clutch in an hour.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
It's happened to me when I loaned my car to someone who...
To an ex-good friend.
who claimed that she could drive. And she drove it for a day. And I put a clutch in it the following day.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she said, I did really well. I didn't stall the car once the whole day.
Oh, but that's the worst thing you can hear.
But I did notice this awful smell the whole time I was driving your car. And, of course, it was the clutch getting cooked.
Well, the trouble is it's a three-day drive. So if the clutch burns out, they've got a problem. They'll be stuck in Georgia somewhere.
Well, they're not likely. First of all, the only trouble they're going to have is getting started from a dead stop. Once they hit Route 95...
Yeah.
They're going to drive hundreds of miles at a stretch without ever using the clutch.
That's the only thing in favor of anything.
But they've got to stop each night, and then when they get to New York City, they've got to drive through New York City.
Well, maybe you can meet them.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good idea.
I mean, that's going to be the hardest part, is when they get to New York City or even before that.
Yeah, like maybe Washington.
Yeah.
you can take the Acela train down to Washington.
Because the only good part is driving on Route 95, because they don't even have to know that they have a stick shift.
Or knowing how to get into reverse, or knowing like even when to go from second to third.
Oh, no, they'll figure that out. They will figure all of that out. I mean,
One
wonderful thing about standard transmission cars is that they do tell you when you're in the wrong gear. It won't tell you necessarily what gear to go in. For example, if you're in third when you should be in second, if you then decide that third's wrong, so I'm going to shift into fourth, it'll do what it was doing in third, except more of it. So you'll say, oh, that was the wrong way. I'll go down to second. And most people figure that out within about a half an hour.
Yeah, and that's fine if there's no traffic.
Well, they could leave at 4 o'clock in the morning, but it would be great if they could get a lesson from somebody. So they're here now, right?
They're in New York.
So you have an opportunity to find someone with a stick shift car.
Yeah, yeah. I actually found a driving lesson place that was willing to give them a lesson, but they just haven't done it yet.
Oh, I think
they have to do it.
They have to do it.
I think they should do it, and they should have to demonstrate some reasonable proficiency before you allow them to go off on this adventure, which, by the way, is going to be a lot of fun for them.
Yeah, I think it is, too, but I just would like to encourage them. And
well, let them take the lesson.
Right, okay, and when the lesson is over, if he gets out of the car and slams the door in disgust,
and says, and stay out,
you'll know that they're not ready yet.
And then I think I'll give them your number, so if they're halfway home and they have a major problem,
there you go.
They can call you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on the other hand, you know, if they get really proficient at driving stick shift, they may decide to take the Palm Beach to Grand Canyon to New York route.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's the other danger, of course, is that I never get my car.
Yeah,
well, you might
right.
or get it. And there are other things to worry about. I don't want to, you know, plant any bees in your bonnet here. But you know, in addition to burning out the potential of burning out the clutch, they could do a lot of other things. So they do need a little bit of instruction insofar as checking the oil and the kinds of things that could go wrong, how to change a flat tire, et cetera. So they need to have a little bit of a lesson before
yeah,
they go.
Well, they do know how to drive. So, yeah. You know, I think that they know about the oil and flat tires, although I'll show them on my car.
Sure.
But I was more worried about stripping the gears or doing something to the clutch. Or...
Oh, yeah. Well, if they strip the gears, that's another $4,000.
Yeah. And they're not likely to do that, but they are likely to wreck the clutch.
Okay.
Unless you give them the lesson.
Give them the lesson and hope for the best and have them call us back, Susan, if you're scared.
One lesson should do it, right?
We hope.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, see
let
you
us
later.
Know if they make it.
All right, I will.
Bye-bye.
I mean,
bye.
Let us know if the car makes it. We don't
okay.
care about that.
No, they'll be fine. See you later.
Thank you, bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug, the subway fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David Gibraltar Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug, the old gray mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parotti. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Kodiak, Pepper Jack, Celeriac, Cheese and Mac, Loin of Yak, Ipecac, Fried Clam Shack, and Midday Snack, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our day-old seafood chef is Amelia Luce. Our physical therapist is Estelle Hoitz. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the semi-pro protesters in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 818, along with Car Talk clothing, CDs, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, the car of the future. What's it going to be like?
Well, how would you know? You never even owned a car of the present.
Well, that's why we're starting a discussion. We recently hosted a show on Nova, and we want to know what people think. Will it run on ethanol? Hydrogen? Electricity? Filippo Benio extra virgin olive oil?
That's my vote!
Check out our Car of the Future discussion all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham and Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though OSHA wonders if its ear protection mandates are robust enough, whenever we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.